From NPR News, this is special coverage of the 2012 Democratic National Convention. I'm Jennifer Ludden in Washington. 4 years after his historic election, can Barack Obama get Americans excited again? He promised a new politics, but has faced polarization and gridlock. He passed health care reform, but in the process galvanized the Tea Party. And despite hundreds of billions in stimulus spending, unemployment remains stubbornly high. This week, the party will make its case for another term. Expect to hear about the auto bailout, Osama bin Laden, and lots about women. Tonight's speakers include First Lady Michelle Obama and the keynote address, a fresh face believed to have a bright future in the party, Julian Castro, the mayor of San Antonio. Joining me from the convention in Charlotte, North Carolina, NPR's senior Washington editor Ron Elving, NPR national political correspondent Mara Liasson and E.J. Dionne of the Washington Post and Brookings Institution, and here in Washington, Matt Continetti of the Washington Free Beacon. Welcome to all of you.
Hello.
Good to be here.
Hey, Jennifer.
Good to be here.
Ron Elving, incumbents are supposed to have an advantage, but Mr. Obama faces quite a challenge this year, and all the polls are very tied.
The polls are tight, the polls have been tight, and the polls remain tight after the Republican National Convention last week in Tampa. We do see a little improvement for Mitt Romney among independents, but it's in low single digits. We see some improvement for him among some of the voters who liked John McCain in 2008, but again, it's just a few digits. They were hoping for a little bigger bounce overall, and really the race remains neck and neck. That's why the Democrats at this point feel they still have an opportunity to be on offense this week and to really take their case to the American people and the viewing public.
EJ, what do you think the party's key goal should be this week?
Well, I think first Mitt Romney left them a big opening because his convention speech was very long on biography and very short on policy specifics, and there are quite a few conservatives out there who scored Romney for that and said it was a mistake. Democrats want to, A, fill in what the real Romney policy is. B, I think Obama has a chance to show what he wants to do, be much clearer on what he wants to do in the next 4 years than Romney was. And the moment a lot of people are waiting for tomorrow is the Bill Clinton moment, because Bill Clinton, I think, has a capacity to reach the voters who could well decide this election, who are white working class voters who might normally vote Republican but liked Bill Clinton and liked the Clinton economy and don't much like Mitt Romney. And with the Clinton-Obama 1-2 punch, Democrats are hoping to get a bounce out of the convention, even though conventions don't have the bounces they used to.
Matt Continetti, what are you going to watch for?
Well, I'm going to be watching for some appeal, any appeal at all, to independent voters. And what I've seen is that the Obama campaign largely has not focused on appealing to independents who are now backing Mitt Romney in some polls by double digits, but instead has been playing basically a base mobilization strategy, focusing on different aspects of the Democratic Party constituency with targeted appeals in order to motivate the base in a turnout election. And what the polls show is that this will be a turnout election. The CNN poll that is kind of bracketing this convention that came out this afternoon shows the race tied 48-48, and Obama's advantage in the real clear politics average of polls is down to 1/10 of a point.
Oof,
that's a tight election.
Mara Liasson, let me ask a little bit different question here. You were in Tampa last week. You're there in Charlotte now. How does the mood compare?
Well, you know, I think both of these parties are very fired up and optimistic and confident. One of them is going to be proved wrong. But I was surprised. I think that given that the Democrats are widely reported to be unenthusiastic and have lost that fire and passion that Barack Obama inspired in them 4 years ago, they might not be fired up, but they are ready to go. And they feel confident. A lot of people I talk to here don't think that the Republicans did themselves much good in Tampa. They didn't make the Democrats change their plans for this convention. They don't have to answer a lot of arguments. They're kind of sticking to the game plan. And they feel very confident. They feel confident about the structure of this race, the fact that they're doing better in battleground states, that they're doing better among key demographics. I agree with Matt that the fact that Obama's losing independents by, in some cases, 2-1 is not good, but they have huge leads among Hispanics. They have to turn out young people. They still have a gender gap. You know, this is a pretty confident group of people.
All right, we'll check in with you guys throughout the evening. Now we're going to go down to the floor of the convention center hall there with NPR's Sonari Glinton. I believe he is with the North Carolina delegation. Hey, Sonari.
Hey, Jennifer, I'm here with a delegate from North Carolina, and she's from Charlotte. Alma Echeverry, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
And so you've been here for more than 40 years. How has Charlotte changed, or how excited are you about the convention being here?
I am ecstatic. I'm ecstatic because it's a historic event for Charlotte that has put us on the world stage, but it's also a way to show how this state and this city has changed from over 40 years ago when I came. From a town of 100,000 or 200,000 to a metropolitan city that it is today.
Well, the president is having some trouble in North Carolina. He won last time, and so the polls show it might not be the same. I mean, how do you see the president doing here in North Carolina? You're out with voters.
I don't think the president is in trouble at all. I think that we are going to carry this state, and I think we're going to carry it with an even higher percentage than we did last time. We need to take into consideration a large increase in the Hispanic vote. There is a great grassroots efforts to get this community to vote, plus also the increase in the population. So if you really look at the issues, and we're going to turn North Carolina blue again.
Well, that seems like a tall order, though.
No, I mean, really, about 2 months ago or so, the poll, one of the polls, I think it was from NC State, said that the president was ahead. And a few weeks later, it said it was Romney within the margin of error. So I'm not conceding purple or a defeat at all.
Well, you know, people here are very excited about the convention being here, especially like Ms. Echeverry said, to get the world to see what a new and interesting city that Charlotte has become.
Absolutely, and it's really a showcase of the state, because when you look at this state, you also realize the large immigrant population that has come looking for a good economy and good jobs, even within the United States, people from New York, from Miami, etc. So we're really a melting pot.
Well, back to you, Jennifer. It's starting to get a little rowdy down here, and we're on the because Jesse Jackson is only a few feet away from me, so he brings the energy when he's around.
All right. Well, it sounds like a lot of energy down there, Sonari. Thanks so much for it, and we'll check in with you as well later on. Ron Elving, of course, these conventions don't start with prime time. We've been having a day, all afternoon full of speeches. Anything stand out yet?
Yes, one thing that stood out, I think, was the introduction of Joseph Kennedy III, who is a grandson of Robert F. Kennedy, and named for the first of the Kennedy brothers who died in World War II. He was a breath of fresh air. He was a new generation of Kennedys, and he led us into a video, and wouldn't it be a Democratic convention without a Kennedy video? This one was dedicated to Teddy Kennedy, who, of course, has died since the last Democratic gathering in 2008. It was an interesting video, an inspiring one, moments from his speeches. But what really got the crowd on their feet was a video clip from his 1994 Senate campaign when he was running against Mitt Romney. And he lets Mitt Romney have it for switching positions on abortion and for a number of other things he had changed on, and said, "This campaign goes on two more weeks. You may even vote for me, Mitt." And it was quite a moment. The crowd really got behind him.
Matt Continenti, will we hear more tonight, you think, about Mitt Romney's current and past positions?
Will we hear more about Mitt Romney at this Democratic convention? Oh, let me guess. Yes, no, I think so. You know, what's so funny is this is one of the few times where the party conventions are back-to-back. And I think it's also one of the few times where both party conventions will really center on one candidate. In this case, I think you're going to hear a lot from the Democrats about Mitt Romney's plans to lower taxes. And also maybe not about how he's flipped on certain positions, because that attack hasn't really worked against him in the past in this cycle. But I think definitely this attempt to portray Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan as extreme will be something we'll hear again and again.
All right. Thanks so much. We're going down back to the floor there in Charlotte. Now NPR's Debbie Elliott is with Congressman Ed Markey. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, Jennifer. How are you?
Good.
I am here with the Massachusetts delegation, where we have just watched the moving tribute to Senator Ted Kennedy, and there was not a dry eye in the crowd. They were singing along with some of his famous speeches, and Congressman Ed Markey was one of the folks watching it. Congressman Markey, how moving was it to see Senator Kennedy tonight?
Well, I served in Congress for 33 years with Ted Kennedy, and he was a living legend. His family and he inspired an entire generation, multiple generations. They're all here on the floor tonight. Robert F. Kennedy, John F. Kennedy, Edward M. Kennedy. And so I think for everyone here tonight, they know that there's some point in their life where he said something, he stood for something that inspired them to get into politics. And you could feel it out here, the magic on the floor of the convention.
You know, there's been a lot of talk in this campaign of what President Barack Obama has to do to generate that kind of enthusiasm and to get Democrats fired up and turned out like he did 4 years ago. He hasn't been able to get that kind of fire just yet. What do you think needs to happen here this week to make that happen?
I think that last week's Republican convention has really got Democrats' energy very high right now. And I think on Thursday night, he's going to blow the top off of this convention. I think the Democrats are ready to march, and it's in the spirit of Teddy Kennedy that they will be doing so.
What kind of themes does he have to hit?
Excuse me?
What kind of themes does the president have to hit?
Well, I think people have to be reminded that we reached 10% unemployment because of the George Bush recession, and that Barack Obama has us back to 8%. The job's not done, but you can't hand the keys to the car back over to the Republicans because they're just going to put it in reverse and put us right back into the same mess.
Thank you, Congressman Ed Markey from Massachusetts, from the floor of the Democratic National Convention here in Charlotte.
Debbie Elliott, thanks so much.
Sure.
Mara Liason, can you give us a bit of a preview of what's coming up tonight? It seems an awful lot of focus on women and very specifically reproductive rights.
Yes, we're going to hear from the president of NARAL, the National Abortion Rights Action League. We're going to hear from a series of women who support abortion rights, including Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius. We're also going to hear from Lily Ledbetter. And Lily Ledbetter is the woman who sued for equal pay. It was one of the, there's the Lily Ledbetter Law, which was one of the very first laws Barack Obama signed when he became president. She'll be speaking. We're also going to hear, of course, from the First Lady, Michelle Obama, who kind of exemplifies everything that Barack Obama has to offer women. The president has a pretty healthy lead among women voters who make up 53% of the electorate. There is a gender gap. It's at about its traditional size right now. It's not bigger or smaller. He also has a pretty healthy lead among Hispanics, and it's not an accident that San Antonio Mayor Julian Castro was chosen to give the keynote.
E.J. Dionne, if you're taking so much time going after those who you already kind of have, if he's already ahead with women and Hispanics, you know, what does that say about the lineup and the strategy tonight?
I think it says a couple of things. One is it's very much about turnout, and he can win Hispanics by an enormous margin, but if they don't show up to vote, they won't have the same effect. Big Hispanic turnout is essential to Obama carrying states like Nevada and Colorado. There's a substantial Hispanic vote here in North Carolina. Similarly, with women, they see an opportunity to expand an already big lead. I think they see moderate middle-class women who often vote Republican, very upset with the Republican Party. Congressman Aiken's comments about legitimate rape opened up, I think, an argument that reaches well into the middle of the electorate among women. And you were talking about earlier about the mood of the convention. I was thinking about this earlier today, that it seems to me if yes, we can was the slogan the last time, yes, we must is the slogan this time. The Democrats, especially after listening to the convention, the Republican convention, as Congressman Markey said, are more determined than ever to stop the Republicans. But I also think that at the Republican convention, the dominant figure really was Barack Obama, because the attacks were on Obama. I think at this convention, Obama will also be the dominant figure, even though there will be plenty of attacks on Mitt Romney.
All right. Matt Continente, EJ talked about going after the moderate Republican, the middle there, but focusing so much on reproductive rights, we're having the head of NARAL, pro-choice, coming up soon. Isn't that a risky strategy as well? Might you alienate some more conservative and religious voters?
Well, it's possible. You know, Gallup has done some great polling on this issue. They found earlier this spring that 50% of the country identifies as pro-life rather than pro-choice. And more women identify as pro-choice as opposed to pro-life, but the gap is not as significant as the overall gender gap. So I think it's hard to attribute the gender gap that Obama enjoys right now solely to abortion rights, as I think the Democratic strategy is doing. I would just say one thing about Ted Kennedy. I remember 4 years ago in Denver when Ted Kennedy addressed the convention, and I came away from that with no doubt in my mind that universal health care would be at the top of Barack Obama's list. I was right, but what will be at the top of the list for the next 4 years, I don't know.
All right. We're going to go down to the podium in Charlotte now. Congressman Jared Polis of Colorado is speaking. He is the first man elected as an openly gay man in Congress.
And work together to forge a better future for ourselves and our families. Diversity is America's strength, and only by working together as one nation can we form a more perfect union. That's why President Obama brought to Washington a vision for one America, an America in which we can overcome divisions of red and blue to make our country better. It's why he's fighting to make citizenship a reality for young immigrants who go to college and serve in our military. It's why he repealed Don't Ask, Don't Tell so that no person is prevented from serving the country they love because of who they love. And it's why Barack Obama became the first sitting president in American history to show his personal support for same-sex marriage. Consistently over the last 4 years, as our nation has struggled through the worst depression since the worst recession since the Great Depression, Barack Obama has shown strong leadership, and he's taken on politics as usual. He's challenged our nation to come together. Barack Obama is the first presidential candidate to refuse contributions from lobbyists. He set the strictest ethics rules in the history of the executive branch. His vision for one America, one in which we can overcome our divisions to make our country greater, continues to be an enormous challenge to Washington, D.C., a town professional pundits and polls whose entire livelihood is never-ended partisan bickering. But ladies and gentlemen, now is our chance to tell the dividers no, to tell the special interests and cynical Washington insiders no, to tell the lobbyists and PACs no, and to tell our fellow countrymen and countrywomen, gay and straight, Christians, Jews, Mormons, Muslims, and non-believers, rich and poor, black and white, Latino and Asian, east and west, north and south, it's time to tell them yes. Together, together we are stronger. Together we are better. Together we are America. And that's why we must continue bringing America together. So tonight, I don't just ask my fellow Americans to respect my relationship with my partner Marlon and my role as a father to our son. I also ask my fellow Americans to respect the Christian family concerned about decaying moral values and crass commercialism. I ask my fellow Americans to respect the very difficult decision of a single mother to bring a child into this world because of her heartfelt beliefs. And that's why we must help that courageous mother have the support she needs after her child is born. We celebrate Americans of all backgrounds and beliefs, even Republicans, because it's their future too. Republicans might have mocked our desire to heal the planet, but we will heal it for Republicans too, and we'll create jobs and improve our schools for Republicans too. We're a diverse country, but we are one country, and we're at our best when we come together as Americans, not despite our differences, but in celebration of them. From our newest arrivals to our Native American brothers and sisters, we are one America. Barack Obama understands that together we can take on any challenge, and together we can move our country forward. out of many, we are one. God bless America.
And that's Jared Polis. He is a congressman from Colorado, the first openly gay man who was elected to Congress. And we are now going to listen in on a video about reproductive choice. We'll see how this plays out on the radio.
There's been a bit of talk about women and women's issues so far this year. I think it's been oversimplified. Women are not an interest group. Women shouldn't be treated that way. Women are half this country and half of its workforce. Instead of putting forward serious plans to help more Americans back to work, a lot of those folks in the other party have chosen to refight battles we settled long ago. This contraception fight, in particular, was illuminating. It was like being in a time machine. Republicans in Congress were going so far as to say an employer should be able to have a say in the health care decisions of its female employees. The days of male politicians controlling the health care decisions of our wives and our mothers and our daughters and our sisters, that needs to come to an end. So the choice between going backward and moving forward has never been so clear. As long as I'm president, we're going to keep moving forward. You can count on that.
A video from the Democratic National Convention in Tampa, in Charlotte. The next speaker is not a politician. She's one of the people appearing under the title American Voices, an effort to bring real people into this convention. Her name is Maria Ciano, and let's listen to her.
My name is Maria Ciano. I grew up in a conservative Republican family in Aurora, Colorado. Many of my relatives can't believe I'm doing this. I guess I can't either. I still believe in small government, but I no longer believe in the Republican Party. Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan want the government to have a say in my family planning. They want employers to decide what kind of birth control coverage I have or if I can have it at all. They want to put insurance companies in charge of my health care. They want to deny me the power to make the most personal decisions about my life. That's not small government. That's not the America I love. The America I love respects the dignity of women. The America I love is a place where, when we say freedom, we mean my freedom to make decisions about my life, not someone else's freedom to make them for me. And that's the America President Obama is fighting for. When women's rights are threatened, President Obama doesn't hide. He stands up, not just for women, but with women. Amplifying our voices and defending our rights. Give him 4 more years, and our right to make our own most personal decisions will be safe for another generation. Give him 4 more years, and he will protect the freedoms in America we all love. Thank you.
Maria Ciano there, a stay-at-home mom and former Republican, saying that she now supports President Obama because of the issue of reproductive health care and abortion rights. We're now going to hear from Nancy Keenan. She's the outgoing president of NARAL, Pro-Choice America. She represents a central argument the Democrats are making tonight that they support abortion rights, and that, of course, is one of the issues clearly separating Democrats and Republicans. Here's Nancy Keenan, NARAL, Pro-Choice America.
On behalf of NARAL Pro-Choice America and our 1 million member activists, I am honored to be here to talk to you about what is at stake for women in 2012. I am proud to say that the Democratic Party believes that women have the right to choose a safe, legal abortion with dignity and with privacy. We believe in family planning because it helps to prevent unintended pregnancy. We believe that a woman considering an abortion should not be forced to have an ultrasound against her will. We believe that rape is rape. We believe that a woman should make health care decisions with her family, her doctor, and her God.
You're listening to live special coverage of the Democratic National Convention from NPR News.
That there is no room for politicians, especially those politicians who don't know how women's bodies work. President who stands with women and who trusts women. A president who signed into law one of the greatest advancements for women's health in a generation. A president who believes in a woman's right to make her own decisions. I know this president, and I can tell you that he cares deeply about the next generation of young women in this country. His daughters, all of our daughters. President Obama had the courage to stand with Sandra Fluck. Without hesitation, he defended her right to tell her story. Mitt Romney did not. That moment illustrates what is at stake in this election. Put simply, women in America cannot trust Mitt Romney. We cannot trust Mitt Romney to protect our health. He would repeal Obamacare, taking away our access to better maternity and prenatal care and the law's near universal coverage of birth control. We cannot trust Mitt Romney to respect our rights. He would overturn Roe versus Wade and sign into law a wave of outrageous restrictions on a woman's ability to make decisions about her pregnancy. Mitt Romney would take away our power to make decisions about our lives and our future. But there is one decision that he cannot take away, and that's the one women will make on November 6th. Leave you with a story tonight, one that serves as my inspiration. I grew up in Anaconda, Montana. It is in the heart of the state's mining country. My dad worked at the copper smelter. It was a tough and dangerous place where copper would boil at 1,200 degrees. He had a brass tag, and on it was his number, 720. Workers like my dad would throw their number in a bucket as they arrive for their shift. And at the end of the day, they would hang it on a pegboard so their buddies would know they made it out safely. Every day my dad threw that tag in that bucket. He did it for his family. He did it for his coworkers. He did it for his community. He did it for his country. He passed away. He passed away when I was in my 20s, before I had decided to run for public office. I carried that brass tag with me during every campaign in Montana. This number symbolizes the value of hard work and opportunity and the importance of sticking together. We are ready to do the hard work. We are ready to work together. We are ready to re-elect President Barack Obama.
And that was Nancy Keenan, president of NARAL Pro-Choice America, praising President Obama for having the courage to support women's health rights, lauding the passage of the Affordable Care Act, which expands health coverage, and saying that women in America cannot trust Mitt Romney to protect our health. We're going now to the floor there at the Democratic Convention in Charlotte. NPR's Debbie Elliott is there with us now. Hey, Debbie.
Hey, Jennifer. I am with Loretta Harper. She's a high school counselor from Las Vegas, Nevada. This is her first time to be a delegate at the Democratic National Convention, and she's been hollering fired up here recently listening to these latest speeches. Hello, Ms. Harper. Can you tell us a little bit about what are the important issues for you here? I see that women's issues are particularly highlighted.
Women is very important, especially health care is so important because as a woman, we have the right to cover pre-existing, get our mammograms paid for, make sure that we have their preventative care because of Affordable Health Care Act. Having students to stay on their parents' health care until they're 26 years old is crucial. Making sure that those little toddlers will be taken care of no matter how old they become, that pre-existing won't matter, help, you know. And we got to take everything. So I'm just fired up. And also, Planned Parenthood is so important. We must keep President Obama reelected for a second term. There's so much at stake.
Are you looking forward to his speech this
week? Yes, I'm fired up. I can't hardly wait. I wake up every day thinking about what can I do to reelect President Obama? Who can I talk to? How many doors can I knock on today? How many can I register today? You know, I just make sure that I give people the knowledge, the accomplishments that President Obama has done these last 3 years he's been in office. So I know he's going to be elected because it's in my heart. I wake up every day. I talk to my neighbors. I talk to my friends. And if I do that, we will make sure that President Obama is reelected November 6th, and we will celebrate the party.
Thank you for speaking with me. You know, Jennifer, this is the kind of enthusiasm that the Democratic Party is counting on, particularly in states like Nevada that are just so important.
Debbie, thank you so much.
Sure.
Ron Elving, can we just take a minute to note, this is it seems like quite a shift here. We've just heard from the head of NARAL. I mean, it wasn't so long ago that abortion rights were divisive among Democrats.
That's right, and they would not be discussed in quite such frank and candid terms as they were discussed tonight by Nancy Keenan, and it was a very powerful and unapologetic speech, a demanding speech, and one that I think would be galvanizing for many who have felt in the past that this issue was too often dealt with using kid gloves. Interestingly, though, Nancy Keenan did not restrict herself to that one issue, as most people would expect her to do given her position. As Matt mentioned earlier, trying to get at the independent voters, as the Democrats are trying to do, they're probably going to reach for some social issues, but it's not just abortion that makes women vote more often for Barack Obama than men. There are a number of other things. There are a range of things, social policies, but also budget priorities and things that women have shown more empathy for in terms of education and other kinds of social spending that also interest their votes. And Nancy Keenan made a very powerful speech on behalf of the working class, particularly her father, who worked in the Anaconda copper mine. And full disclosure, I should say my grandfather worked in that same mine.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay, and so she talked about more than abortion rights, but I mean, do you think this is something the Democrats intended to make such a big issue, or is this a response to the Republicans sort of making this a big issue in recent months?
There's no question that the Democrats want to be on the offensive with respect to this issue. It's not because it's strictly emotional. They've done a lot of polling. They have calculated that this is an issue that will keep the gender gap as robust as it was in 2008. But it isn't the only reason they think that gender gap will exist.
I think it's could I add something?
Sure.
Yeah, it's EJ. I think it's important to note that there are still pro-life Democrats. They had a meeting today. I think the Obama campaign has figured out that in the end there are more votes in taking this strong position. But let's not miss, because everybody will ignore it, Jared Polis' speech, a gay man who spoke up in favor of Christian families.
EJ, I'm so sorry to do this. We will come back to you. We're going to go to the podium now. We're hearing from Nate Davis. He is another average American featured at this convention.
Because of the new GI Bill, I was able to attend an amazing university, Xavier University in Cincinnati, Ohio. While I was there, I got to intern with Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown. And now that I have graduated, I have a job as Director of Veterans Affairs at Xavier. The GI Bill keeps opening doors for me. 800,000 vets have gone back to school on the new GI Bill, a law that Barack Obama championed in the Senate and expanded as president. They've all earned it, and the president had their backs. Last year, a guy told me thanks to the GI Bill benefits, he had a chance to go to college. He had always told his daughters how important education was, but now he was showing them with his example. And now he's happy to sit at the kitchen table and do his homework right next to his two daughters. So thank you, President Obama. And to all the veterans out there, even if you're having a hard time, don't give up. Believe in God and keep going forward. Thank you. God bless you.
And that was Nate Davis of Xavier University, who talking about how he was able to attend college on the GI Bill. He's one of the average Americans featured at this convention. And you'll find more convention news and analysis at our website. You can also join in a live chat. That's at npr.org. Coming up later this evening, Michelle Obama will be speaking, along with the keynote speaker, Julian Castro, the mayor of San Antonio. You are listening to special coverage of the 2012 Democratic National Convention from NPR News. From NPR News, this is special coverage of the 2012 Democratic National Convention. I'm Jennifer Ludden in Washington. One speaker after another is stepping to the podium in Charlotte, North Carolina. We're bringing you that live this evening, along with analysis of what Democrats have to say. E.J. Dionne of the Washington Post and Brookings Institution, I so rudely interrupted you a moment ago. Would you like to finish that thought?
You weren't rude at all. I always want ordinary people to stand in front of me. I think that what struck me, and it may not be a central theme of tonight, but Jared Polis, whom, as you pointed out, was the first, I guess, gay man elected without getting reelected. I think Barney Frank was reelected as a gay man.
He was the first man elected while he was openly gay.
Yeah.
Barney Frank came out after being elected.
Right. And I think that it was striking that he spoke out in favor of Christian families concerned about commercialism. He spoke out in favor of women who choose not to have abortions, who want to bring their kids in the world, and the support we should give them. And on a night that where we're really going to hear an awful lot of very aggressive language on social issues, I thought it was good to say this isn't all about culture wars, and it was just nice to hear somebody kind of reach out to people who probably would never vote for him and wouldn't vote for Barack Obama. And I thought that was a useful thing, and I wanted to note it before it disappeared.
Okay, well, thank you. Matt Continenti, EJ says, a speaker there noting it's not about culture wars.
Right, and I think EJ makes a great point. And, of course, what makes Jared Polis's interesting speech news is that it's news. It's unusual. It's new. And I think it's definitely counter-programming from the rest of the convention, which will focus on a very hard, you know, pro-abortion rights, social issues message to favor the Democrats, but also, most importantly, to distract from the economy. The economy does not favor Barack Obama. These social issues may favor him slightly in terms of turnout, and that's why we see this huge emphasis on them tonight and for the next 2 days.
Matt, Ron Elving, big distraction from the economy. Is that what this is?
It is that, although there are other reasons for the Democrats to want to hold their coalition together. Matt is right. The issue that the Republicans wanted to talk about obsessively last week was the disappointments of the recovery from the recession. And they are many, and they continue. Later this week, we're going to get jobs numbers on Friday. We don't know what they're going to contain, but they could very likely put a damper on the enthusiasm the Democrats would otherwise take out of this convention.
EJ, what do the Democrats need to say on the economy this week after the drubbing last week?
Well, I think the message is clear, and they finally got it after some problems on the talk shows this Sunday. Now in every election, Reagan's question is asked, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And Obama and the Democrats have to answer, yes, we are better off than we were when the economy nearly collapsed at the moment Barack Obama took office, and that Obama did a lot of things that got us back on track, but things need to get better still. And then let's compare what Obama would do with what Romney would do, and voters will be asked, and I think there's a lot of polling suggesting they lean on Obama's side on this part of the argument. The things Obama wants to do are more popular than the tax cuts for the rich and the deregulation that Romney wants to do. So it's a two-step. Say that they did some things that were right, but acknowledge there's pain that still needs to be healed.
But Matt Continenti, a recent Pew Research Center poll actually found a lot of Americans still blame the Bush administration more than the current one for their bad economy.
That's true, but the underlying theme here is the economy is still bad. And, you know, Carville and James Carville and Stanley Greenberg did a study earlier this summer where they warned Democrats and the Obama campaign, and they said, look, our focus groups show voters are not buying this idea that things are getting better. And sure enough, you look at that right track, wrong track number, 2-1, Americans continue to believe things are in the wrong track. So, you know, they might, certain issues, as EJ says, including tax cuts, may favor the Democrats on an issue-by-issue basis. Overall, the economy favors Romney. That's why he has advantages on that issue and on the issue of the deficit and the debt in the polling. And I think that's also why he has his lead. Not quite enough to win yet, but that's why he has that lead among independent voters as well.
Ron Elving, we've heard so many times that no president's been reelected with an unemployment rate this high, but we also haven't had such a big recession. Very briefly, if you can just address that.
If the unemployment rate were down to 7 or 6.5 or even lower, I suspect this convention would feel a great deal more like a coronation. But that is the enormous anchor that they're dragging behind them.
All right. We're going to hear now from the governor of Rhode Island, Lincoln Chafee. He's a former Republican senator, but he endorsed President Obama in 2008 and then became an independent in 2010. He has cited the GOP's move to the right as the reason that he left the Republican Party. So walking up there to the podium in Charlotte at the Democratic National Convention, Governor
Good evening.
Lincoln Chafee.
And thank you for having me here to celebrate with all of you. As the nation's only independent governor, I am here tonight to join with my Democratic friends on the eve of an election critical to the future of our children and their country. As a former Republican, I represent a group of Americans who all too often have no one to speak for them. This group doesn't necessarily have a name. We've been called moderates, but that term can be misleading. There's nothing moderate about our love of country or our passion for America's future. There's nothing moderate about our desire to work together within the broad political center in which most Americans live. No matter what you call us, though, This is certain. There are a lot of us and all over the country, and in November, we will once again help elect Barack Obama President of the United States. We are, at our core, conservatives, in the best sense of the word, thoughtful, responsible with public resources, and respectful of personal freedom. And we're liberal, in the best sense of the word. We believe that government can and should be an instrument for the greater good. And although my former party has hijacked the term, there's really nothing conservative about today's Republican Party. No. In fact, there is no room there for traditional conservatives like us. But I am proud to say that in my friend President Barack Obama, we have found a champion for the principles we hold dear. First, we love this land, literally. We believe in environmental stewardship, protecting our air and our water. Because despite what big business and this Republican Party would have you believe, destroying these precious resources will cost us far more in the future than preserving them now. Second, we believe in personal freedom. We do not want the government controlling our personal lives or our most personal decisions. Believing in freedom as we do, we don't think it's the role of government to pass judgment on a relationship between two consenting adults, regardless of their orientation. That's freedom. And believing in freedom, we believe a woman should make her own reproductive decisions. Third, we take seriously the decision to enter into foreign entanglements. During the last administration, then-Senator Obama and I served together on the Foreign Relations Committee. There we shared a mutual desire to end the prevailing attitude of arrogance and recklessness on matters of war and peace that characterized those years. President Obama, he knows that wars are not to be entered into lightly. He knows that overseas conflicts don't only do damage in the land in which they are fought, but in the land of those who fight them as well.
Fourth, and we've been listening to Lincoln Chafee, the governor of Rhode Island, a former Republican senator who's now an independent. He said there is nothing conservative about today's Republican Party, and he lauded the Democrats' environmental stewardship and personal freedoms without government interference. Joining us now is Tim Kaine. He's former governor of Virginia and chair of the Democratic National Committee, and he's running for a U.S. Senate seat. Welcome to you.
It's great to be with you.
You spoke at the convention earlier this evening about how Virginia went, as you said, from red to purple in 2008. But it's not blue yet. And Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan are spending a lot of time in your state. Where do things stand?
It's definitely purple. You know, we've moved it from so red to purple in the last 4 or 5 years. But that's good for all Virginians, because whether you're a Democrat, Republican, or Independent, it used to be nobody came because nobody needed to. But now both parties have to come. So the president was in Charlottesville last Wednesday. Congressman Ryan was in Richmond Friday. The president was in Norfolk again today. And we Virginians, we like being taken seriously.
Well, you've quoted President Obama as calling Virginia a, quote, checkmate state. What does he need to do to carry it again?
Pretty much the same, you know, the same thing as last time. Do well in the major metropolitan areas. He has an opportunity because of the Republican committee's, the Republican ticket's position on things like Medicare, to pick up some votes in rural Virginia that he didn't get last time. And then something I think that's very important for the president in Virginia is he won in 2008, even though he was a foreign policy newcomer running against a bona fide American war hero. We're the most military state in the country in terms of the connections of voters to the military, and this president is now a battle-tested wartime president running against a newcomer to the military and foreign policy, and he's going to do a lot better among the one-third of the electorate that's directly connected to the military than he did 4 years ago.
Now that it's a bona fide swing state, Virginia's airwaves are bombarded with all these campaign ads funded by the so-called super PACs. What effect are they having in your own Senate race against former Virginia Senator Governor George Allen?
I'm proud to say that the super PACs and their three main ones started to run ads against me in November, and they've been on the air for about 9 months. They put about $10 million on the air, and they have not been able to move the polls one-tenth of 1 point, even though we didn't start running ads till about 2 weeks ago. We really bet that Virginians would reject the negative, and we also bet that they weren't that interested in hearing ads at all before the Olympics were over. So we've just been saving our money, and we just went on TV. Very positive ads in English and Spanish TV, radio, and digital, and we feel like we've got what we need to communicate effectively with the electorate between now and Election Day.
Some Democratic candidates have been keeping their distance from the president this year. You have not.
Absolutely not.
Well, Republicans have taken to calling you his cheerleader-in-chief. Do you think this might hurt you in such a tight race?
You know, there are people who like the president and like me better because they do, and there are folks who don't like the president and maybe like me a little bit less, but I tell you, anybody who thinks that supporting the president is the wrong thing to do, they just don't understand the Virginia electorate. We're a birthplace of presidents. We've got more people who've probably taken an oath to the commander-in-chief, either as active guard, reserve, or veterans of anybody in this country. And so the notion that you're going to bash somebody because they support the president doesn't make sense to the Virginia electorate. I was governor for 3 years with George Bush as president, and even though we disagreed on many things, we worked as partner on a whole lot of projects. I worked as partner with President Obama in my last year as governor, and I'm going to be a good partner for the country and the Commonwealth with whoever is president of the United States.
Tim Kaine, former governor of Virginia, now running for U.S. Senate seat. Thank you so much.
You bet. Great to be with you.
And we're going to go back to the podium now in Charlotte. California Congressman Javier Becerra is approaching this stage. He served as a liaison between the Obama campaign and the Hispanic community, and he's also a strong supporter of comprehensive immigration legislation. He's coming in a moment. We'll be there when he does. Ron Elving, Tim Kaine talked about Virginia as a swing state. North Carolina also, very surprisingly, went to President Obama 4 years ago, and they're clearly hoping to rally the grassroots there by holding their convention there, but it's not such a sure bet this year, is it?
North Carolina was the narrowest of all of Barack Obama's wins in 2008. He also narrowly won Indiana. That was also a big surprise. Neither Virginia nor Indiana had gone for the Democratic Party since the huge LBJ blowout of 1964. So these were huge turnarounds. North Carolina was a state, too, that had been usually red, usually in the Republican column, and it switched to the Democrats in 2008 largely because of the growth of the Hispanic vote here, which has continued in the last 4 years. As we heard one of the folks on the floor say a little earlier, they're hoping to exploit that greater growth among the Hispanic population in the state for even more of an advantage this time in 2012, and then in 2008. But that's going to be a tough order because it's gotten steeper for Barack Obama among the rest of the state's population. He'll still get the non-white vote, but he's going to have a tougher time with the white vote than he did in 2008.
Matt Continenti, what states is Mitt Romney in a good position to snatch back this year?
Well, actually, you know, we have seen this divergence between Romney having a very close margin, almost neck and neck in the national polls, and the swing states, it's not quite as good. I think he's strong in Florida. I think he's strong in North Carolina, definitely Indiana. Virginia, Ohio, those are ones that Obama is favored in.
All right, now we have another average American voice here, Stacey Lynn in Charlotte.
That's not true. Not even close. For me, there was the day the Affordable Care Act passed, and I no longer had to worry about getting Zoe the care she needed. There was the day the letter arrived from the insurance company saying that our daughter's lifetime cap had been lifted. There was the day the Supreme Court upheld Obamacare. Like so many moms with sick children, I shed tears and I could breathe easier, knowing we have that net below us to catch us if we fall, or if, God forbid, Zoe needs a heart transplant. Obamacare provides my family security and relief. But we're also scared. Governor Romney repealing health care reform is something we worry about literally every single day. Zoe's third open heart surgery will happen either next year or the year after. If Mitt Romney becomes president and Obamacare is repealed, there's a good chance she'll hit her lifetime cap. There's no way we could afford to pay for all the care she needs to survive. When you have a sick child, it's always in the back of your mind and sometimes in the front of your mind. On top of that, worrying that people would let an insurance company take away her health care just because of politics? One in 100 children are born with a congenital heart defect. President Obama is fighting for them. He's fighting for families like mine, and we need to fight for him.
And that's Stacy Lynn, a mother there, speaking as a so-called American voice at the Democratic Convention in Charlotte. She talked about how the Affordable Care Act lifted a lifetime cap on her daughter Zoe's health care. Her daughter has congenital heart illness, and she says when the Supreme Court upheld Obamacare, she shed tears. A heartfelt defense there of the president's health care law at the Democratic National Convention. You're listening to special coverage from NPR News.